Welcome to the Ghost Hacks Podcast. What you are about to hear may make you laugh, it may make you cry, it may make you shake in your boots. Two prison gods talking about strange things in the night they may never understand. And here are your hosts, Tom and Joe.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Ghost Hacks Podcast, episode 9.
Yay!
I'm Ghost Joe.
And I'm Tom.
What's going on, everybody? Listen, we have an awesome show for you tonight. We have an awesome interview with famed demonologist Carl L. Johnson. It's a great, great interview. I can't wait for you guys to listen to this because this guy has some insane stories. And he's a very, very cool guy, too. So,
yeah,
you know, what I liked about him was that, of course, he's serious about what he talks about, but he still has a sense of humor about, you know,
oh, definitely,
which was great about him. You know, very, very down to earth guy.
Bro, I was so into what he was saying. Like, I had planned to take a little bit of a piss with him, you know, like, hey, man, you're a demonologist. How do you put that on your taxes? You know, what do you declare on your taxes? You know what I mean? But nah, right. Man, I was like edge of my seat that whole interview. That guy was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like I'm thinking about, like, because one thing he is going to mention, and I'm going to link it in the show notes for this episode, is he was talking about an event that he has coming up in March. I wish I could go to that, man. That would be insane to go to, just to see him in person, just to hang out.
He said it was close by, though.
Well, it's approximately 2.5 hours from us.
Yeah, so.
But it's not terrible. Not terrible.
Yeah, road trip.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. Ghost Hacks road trip.
Ghost Hacks road trip.
Ghost Hacks on the road, on tour.
Will there be a titty bar? That's all, you know, we can see.
This is a family show. No, it's not a
family show. No, it's not a fucking family show. Come on. So full of shit, your eyes are brown.
We can't even go like a sentence without cursing sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Bro. All right, side note, right? During Sandy, my friend's house floated away, right? So we roll on the Channel 4 News swimming out to this guy's house, right? So they were doing, you know, shots of us and trying to recover his property and all that and whatnot. And I literally just like looked at the camera and I was like, this is the worst shit I ever seen in my life. You know, my cousin calls me up. He's like, I timed it. 0.4 seconds you was on TV, you could not curse.
Oh man. Yeah, no, I know who you're talking about, and that was horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible situation. Horrible. I hope he's a listener too, because I like that guy.
I haven't seen him in a long time.
So today, before the interview, I'd like to talk a little bit about sleep paralysis, also known as the old hag syndrome. So a lot of people attribute sleep paralysis to, you know, either a paranormal event or an alien abduction. And I'm not saying that those things don't happen, but this is a clear, proven medical anomaly that happens to approximately 30% of the population of the world at least once in their lifetime. Basically, what sleep paralysis is you're waking up without being able to move or speak, and you're in the REM cycle of your sleep, which is the rapid eye movement. It's like a deep sleep where that's where all your dreaming happens, is in that cycle. So what happens is your brain wakes you up. It's like a glitch in your sleep pattern, and your brain wakes you up, and but you're still sleeping. So you're able to look around, but you can't move because your body still thinks you're sleeping. So your mobility is gone. You can't move. And you also, because I guess because your voice, you know, your voice box is also a muscle, that doesn't work either. So you can't talk, you can't scream, you can't call for help or anything because you're still sleeping. Also, what happens in the REM cycle, like I had said, was that's where all your dreaming takes place. So when you're in this state and you can't move around, now you start dreaming. And of course, you know, with all this stuff going on, you can't move, you can't speak, you can't do anything. You're going to start having some crazy dreams. You're going to start hallucinating.
Well, yeah.
You know, so you're going to start hallucinating about a ghost keeping you there and you're seeing this and seeing that, or aliens, you know, keeping you there and you can't move. And like I said, I'm not saying that that stuff doesn't happen. But this is just another thing that you could take away, that it might be this. Now, sleep paralysis has been around for a very, very long time. The first documented case was in the 1600s. Let's see. Some of the reason why they call it the old hag syndrome as well is because in other cultures, they attributed this anomaly to supernatural things. You know, such as the Japanese had said that sleep paralysis is a spirit seeking vengeance by suffocating you in your sleep.
Making you eat raw fish your entire life. Yeah, man, come on, bro. We eat like California roll, and them motherfuckers is eating fish guts on a stick. Man, you... I don't know, bro.
So, yeah. So, in Brazil, now, if this one doesn't stop you from eating, you know, before you go to sleep, I don't know what does. In Brazil, they say that the culprit of sleep paralysis is a roof-dwelling crone, named Psiadeira, who attacks those who sleep on their backs while their stomachs are full.
Man, I don't get any of that. Say that again. I didn't catch any of that. What's a crone?
All right, so basically it's about, I don't know, probably some kind of fucking gremlin or something, who attacks people who sleep on their backs while their stomachs are full. Yeah, so this whole old hag syndrome, sleep paralysis, has been around for a long time, and a lot of different cultures have, you know, explained it in different ways.
Sure. Yeah.
So basically, some of the symptoms. Now, I'm reading this from healthline.com. Just so if you guys want to look it up, and I'm going to link it in the show notes as well. So the symptoms of sleep paralysis are the inability to move, speak, or breathe properly, hallucinations, auditory hallucinations, so you're imagining hearing things, you're imagining smelling things, which I think is kind of crazy that you could be sleeping and imagine smelling something, you know?
Yeah, really.
A sense of heaviness or pressure on your chest, and a feeling of being watched or touched, sometimes in a threatening or sexual manner.
I saw Ghostbusters.
That's right. So who are at risk for sleep paralysis? This is kind of a long list. That's why I guess 30% of the whole population experiences this. But if you fall asleep intoxicated, this could happen to you. If you have jobs with irregular sleep patterns, that's corrections all the way.
Yeah, that's for, you know, sure.
Student athletes, anybody with anxiety disorders, stress disorders, experience trauma, sleep apnea, bipolar disorder. I mean, the list goes on. Experiencing jet lag or narcolepsy. All this stuff could be a risk for sleep paralysis. So, you know, at the same time, I don't want to discredit people. Like I said it twice already. You know, I don't want to discredit people or kind of make this into like a medical show more than it's a paranormal show. But just to say that, you know, there could be a logical explanation for certain things too.
Right.
Basically, all it says to do, you know, to make sure this doesn't happen is to get better sleep. Like I said, it's a glitch in the mind. It's just going to happen.
Look, the mind, for lack of a better term, the mind has to clean itself, has to take a shower. And this is the way it's going to get itself right, you know?
Yeah, I mean, luckily there's no, it says that there's no real harm in it. Like, I guess so, you know, I assume there hasn't been any documented, you know, deaths due to sleep paralysis. You know, because I do believe that it's just like anything else. If you're having a horrible nightmare, you know, and the nightmare is getting worse and worse and worse, you could kind of wake yourself up, you know? You jolt yourself awake. And I believe that that's what happens with this as well. You know, you start having this sheer terror, this sheer, you know, thing going on. And
yeah.
So eventually you're going to regain mobility and you're going to get out of that situation.
I always like the nightmares where you're falling and then you wake up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those are always cool. Like, oh, bungee jumping in my bed.
Well, you know, I have always been able, since I was a kid, I've been able to control my dreams. I know how to control them. Like, I mean, a lot of people don't know how to do that or even that that's possible. But if I'm in a dream and I know I'm dreaming, I could change the outcome of my dream. I can make anything happen I want in my dream. That's called a lucid dream. You know, and we'll talk about that in another episode because I love talking about lucid dreams. I think they're fascinating.
All right. Well, listen, now that we brought up dreams, man, and don't tell me you never had it. The jail dream. Every CO's had the jail dream, bro.
Which one's that? Enlighten me.
The one where you are the convict. Every CO's had that dream, bro. That's a nightmare.
I probably have had that dream. I mean,
come on. I don't know one CO that never had that dream.
I thought you were going to talk about a totally different other kind of dream, you know, but.
You sick bastard. I don't listen, Joe. I don't judge. Everybody needs a hobby.
I was going to say the one where you win the lottery. I don't know.
yeah, sure.
So, yeah. So listen, everybody, that's our little segment before the interview. The interview was awesome. Like I said, I can't wait for you guys to listen to it. Also, check out our website, www.ghosthackspodcast.com. There you could check out blogs, info on all of our guests, including their links and their little bios and stuff like that. You could check out all of our episodes, as well as our store, where 100% of our profits go towards a charity called the First Responders Children's Foundation.
If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please go down to the purple icon, give us 5 stars, leave a review. Apparently it doesn't matter what you say in the review. You could say, I like turtles, but as long as you leave a review, the Apple Podcast wizards, will send us to another listener who might be into it just because we're getting reviews. So thank you in advance, for doing that, if you don't mind.
Also, we're on all of the social media platforms right now. We're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on TikTok, and our Facebook group, the Ghost Hacks Podcast.
Yes, Instagram, we are Ghost Hacks Podcast. And yes, every one of those videos that Ghost Joe is doing in his car, yes, the fences behind you are the jail that Joe had just gotten to work, and he's banging out a quick video before he goes in. So somebody asked me, yes, those chain link fences behind Joe are the jail where he's working.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And that's not the only video that, I do, by the way. I must do about 20 videos before I get to the one I actually like, because I keep messing up. Like I'll get all the way to the end and then I'll mess up a word. I'll be like, fuck, you know, and I'll have to go, because I'm trying to keep everything. I'm not a very fast person, Tom. I'm not a very fast person. So I don't talk very fast either. Right. But I'm trying to get these videos under a minute because I want to put them on TikTok.
Right. Right.
So it's very, very difficult for me to get all this information out.
My name's Ghost Joe, Jenny. Also, Joe, just don't know if we touch base on it, but one of the reviews on Apple Podcasts today asked us to get more, talk to more COs about the experiences, the supernatural, paranormal experiences COs might have had. I don't know if we talked about, I know we've talked about this. I don't know if it's in a future episode, but this is why we allow people to call us and leave a story. What's the number, Joe?
845-379-1331.
Thank you. This is why we allow people to call us, leave a voicemail, and leave it anonymously. We love the interaction. We're going to use it. But because you're carrying a shield and you have to go through 19 psych tests just to get your job, we don't want your bosses getting in your ass and sending you for more psych tests just because you have a ghost story. So if you want to share, we want you to share. Do it anonymously. No harm, no foul.
Also, if you are trying to get one of those jobs and you haven't taken the psych yet, if they ever ask you who is a better president, George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, it's always going to be Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
Just FYI.
Yeah. Yeah. The 1,200 question psych test is only 400 questions. They're written three different.
Absolutely.
Each question is written out three different ways.
The state one took me all of a good 7 hours to do. I was in there for 7 hours doing the state one. I think the city one, I think it took me like 4 hours to do.
Oh, bro, I totally abacabbed.
Oh, my God. Don't say that too loud, man.
25 years later, I'm shocked I got this job, bro. Abacab, 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 DDD. Abacab.
You have to be somewhat sane to get the job, but I believe after a certain time, the sanity kind of dwindles a little bit, slightly.
Yeah, yeah. There's a bell curve. Like every 5 years. All right. Well, we'll give them those 3 points.
Also, I've been getting a lot of people saying, I've gotten some good suggestions as well. We will eventually get to do an entire show on haunted prisons, because a lot of people have been asking us to do that. I've been getting that suggestion quite often. So I'm sure we could make that happen. Another friend of mine had said to do an episode or a segment on haunted music venues, because he said there's quite a few. So maybe we could look into that and see what we could find with that as well.
Yeah.
But we have, we have some great interviews coming up as well. You know, in the future episodes, we have some lined up. We have some that are already recorded. And I definitely keep listening, guys, because this is going to get really good, especially tonight's show.
Yeah. Sit back.
Yeah. You know, and we say it quite often, and I say it quite often, but you might actually have to change your shorts at the end of this episode.
You and your shorts.
Well, bro. You know, it doesn't sound good with change your pants, all right? Change your shorts sounds better. I'm not going to say change your fucking underwear, you know?
Joe, tell the nice psych lady all about your shorts, Ghost Joe.
But yeah, we're still doing the Zoom thing, guys. So it's we're gonna try and get something else going so it sounds a little bit better for you guys. And we're also tinkering around other ideas as well. So
we got plans.
Yeah. And we want to take you guys for a ride with us with those plans. So
yeah. Check us out on please give us a call. Tell us what you want to hear. Review us on Apple Podcasts. Check us out on Instagram, TikTok, the Facebook group.
And buy some stuff from that store because we're not getting a penny of it. It's all going to charity. So
it's really going to a good cause.
And actually, if you go to our store, you'll see there's a little sticker at the bottom of each item that says 100% proceeds go to charity. So you'll see that right on the website there. So I guess that's it, man. So without further ado, check out this awesome interview that we have with demonologist Carl L. Johnson. Later, everybody.
See ya.
So with us today, we have famed demonologist Carl L. Johnson. Carl has been a demonologist for over 47 years. He worked alongside Ed and Lorraine Warren to help the Perrin family, who inspired the 2013 movie The Conjuring. Carl, along with his identical twin brother Keith, have also been on numerous TV shows such as the first two seasons of The Ghost Hunters. Carl has had other numerous television credits, including the shows Paranormal State on A&E Network, The Haunting on Animal Planet, Finding Bigfoot on Animal Planet, Most Terrifying Places in America on the Travel Channel, A Haunting on The Learning Channel, Destination America Television, and the Travel Channel, Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel, and Mysteries Decoded on the Travel Channel. Carl has also co-founded Duo Demonology with Deacon James Anito and Panorama Paranormal, co-founded with Elise Giammarco Carlson. He also runs the website Demonology Incorporated. Please welcome to the show, demonologist Carl L. Johnson.
All right. Hello, Carl.
Hey.
Hello there. Good to be with you. Thank you for the invitation. Here I am, comfortably seated in front of the screen, ready to go and answer questions. I think you have some. I think you have 13 questions. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a few questions here. So I guess let's get started with, can you tell us what exactly is demonology and what are the duties of a demonologist?
Oh, sure. I have my own definition of demonology, and I think the most in the field would concur with this. Demonology is the systematic study of the lore and cultural traditions of wicked spirits. Lacking scientific terminology, you know, that's what we call them, wicked spirits. And a demonology, well, it depends. Now, there's academic demonology, and that's where somebody makes a study of it, researches and can lecture on it. An applied demonologist will actually go out into the field and address some of these situations that are brought to our attention, some of the more malevolent sounding cases. That may mean we go to the house and speak with the people, or we consult with them, you know, via internet or whatever media we have available. People do ask for me to, you know, demonologist, when there is a hairy case and it seems kind of scary and formidable, they ask us to come and to their house, and the feeling we can maybe clear it up or at least advise them in person. We can't always jump into the van with our equipment and go, like, because some of these calls are, you know, like 900, 1,000 miles away or more, and can't always be there. But we will address the situation, speak to the people. And that's applied demonology, when you actually get out there and try to intervene or intercede on people's behalfs.
And what got you interested in becoming a demonologist or demonology?
I would say that was when I met Ed and Lorraine Warren. And that goes back a ways to guy. I don't think you guys were born then. I met them. your thoughts. Now, I met Ed and Lorraine Warren at a lecture given they gave at Rhode Island College in Providence, and that was jeepers crow. That's April 1972. And I remember I was 17 years of age. I was sitting out there in the audience and saying, that's who I want to be when I grow up. I want to do what those guys are doing. You know, because they weren't just ghost hunters. They were, you know, really into their science or their presentation. They were showing slides and audio recordings from the haunted sites. that they've been to. So they had some audience participation. They're asking questions. Ed and Lorraine were. And I raised my hand for a couple. They said, come up here, young man. So I actually started speaking with the Warrens. And my experience with the Warrens is I've lectured with them several times. I'm fortunate enough to say I've done that. And what a charming couple to know. I don't always agree with their methods and didn't then, but it was just wonderful to know them. And I also participated in a paranormal investigation that was conducted in Harrisville, Rhode Island. And it was actually my team, of which I was a member based at Rhode Island College, who first notified the Warrens about that situation. We were consulting them. It's not that we felt we were in over our heads. We just thought what a nice touch it would be to bring in the Warrens, a touch of professionality to, you know, consult Ed and Lorraine. Well, they volunteered to become part of that investigation. And 40 years later, that became the premise of the popular motion picture, The Conjuring.
Wow. So on that note, then, what were the parents actually experiencing? You know, because obviously Hollywood always likes to put their own spin on things and make things a lot bigger than they actually were or a lot different than they actually were. What were the parents actually experiencing in that house?
Well, like I said, it was based on true circumstances in that there was a family and the parents resided in Harrisville, Rhode Island, and they had a very old farmhouse they bought, and it turned out to be a haunted house. But I grew up in a haunted house, too. I mean, the house was about my age, but it had paranormal activity. And I wouldn't say that we had or that the parents had any more severe happenings in their house than we did. You know, sometimes things would happen. Sometimes pots and pans would fly off a shelf. Sometimes you'd hear disembodied voices or footsteps, you know, when there's nobody there. It affected Carolyn Perrin, you know, the wife of Roger Perrin. It affected her deeply. And I think that's why such commotion was made about their haunting. You know, I thought it was the kind of haunting you could kind of sit back and enjoy. But it was Carolyn's own experience, and we don't know how much, you know, was valid at the time. I know it was very real to her. We did experience paranormal activity there. Of course, we were a new group. We were in our teens and early 20s, our members. And so when we heard things, you know, shuffling around and heard knocks on the wall, and so I personally saw this blackness, not even a form, issuing down the hallway, and it enveloped me. People are still seeing that there. This is just absence of vision. Just this black cloud comes in. And we thought, oh, this is gangbusters. We've got real paranormal activity. And it was a very good association with the parents. But when we introduced the Warrens, then we lost out on that because the Ed and Lorraine totally took over that case.
Was that the only case that you guys worked or that you had worked with?
As far as a paranormal investigation, yes. And I should clarify that the Warrens had more of an intercession than an actual investigation. They were convinced right away that it was a malevolent haunting. Lorraine called it demonic, the demon witch Bathsheba Sherman, which was not at all rooted in history. And so they took more of a subjective approach, whereas we were trying to conduct a scientific investigation in that we could record and document our results and evidence. So that was the only paranormal case I worked on with Ed and Lorraine, but lectured with them several times. And, you know, just they had dinner over at my parents' house a couple of times. So we became quite friendly with Ed and Lorraine Warren.
As far as demonology goes, right?
Yes.
Obviously, I know there's got to be many, but how many demons are out there? Is there a hierarchy as far as demons go, or?
Oh, yes. I do believe that they have a rank and file system. You know, they have echelons and all and subordinates. It's kind of like militaristic. As far as how many, it is stated biblically that 1/3 of the heavenly hosts were cast out of the celestial realm in the Great Revolt. Of course, that's Christian theology or mythology, and it depends on your point of view. If you embrace it as truth, then it's theology. If you feel it's a good story, it's mythology. But supposedly 1/3 of the heavenly hosts, the thing is, we don't know how many there were in the heavenly realms, so that's just not even conjecture. The one person or one demonologist colleague of mine put forth the theory that there is an equal and matching number of demons for every living human being. doesn't seem to make a lot of sense because we're all getting, always getting more human beings, but maybe the, you know, demons pop up for everyone there is on earth. So I don't know. My own belief in that or theory is that you could take every demonic entity that ever existed, every demon, and in a physical sense, they would fit on the head of a pin because they are thought forms. They are barely physical. They can manifest as something you see, but they're rather insubstantial in a physical sense. So that's really an indefinite number. You could get as many people as you poll on that, you probably get a different answer. Me, it's the big Dunno, D-U-N-N-O, big Dunno on that. You can conjecture.
Yes.
Probably a lot of them, though.
What draws a demon to want to possess someone or possess something? Is it religion or is it the lack of religion?
Well, they, as a species of creature, you know, not knowing just what to call them, they do seem very interested in the human race. And to possess is a victory, and it gives them an entry into our physical plane and where they can take root. Classically, it's just malice. They hate human beings. They are minions of the devil. So if they can destroy a human life, all the better for them. I just think they're trying to gain access to our world. They're coming from another dimensional reality, you know, assuming they are real. They come in, and if they possess somebody, that's their tool. That gives them a grounding in our world. Some of these answers have to be ambiguous because we're dealing with what is basically the unknown.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Right. Since we've been doing this podcast, sometimes I'd tell one of my friends, hey, you know, listen to the podcast. We're talking about this today. We're talking about that next week. And they'll be like, no, you know, that's bad mojo, man.
Oh, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Could watching a TV show or listening to a podcast or reading a book or thinking about, you know, a demonic entity, could that bring that into reality?
My overall answer is yes. I have to qualify it. If someone dreads these things, these dark forces, if someone is, it's sensible to be apprehensive when we're talking about these things, but if somebody has a real dread about them, believes in them, believes they are real and threatening, and has an innate dread of the demon, then yes, that can create a lodestone in one's mind. I bring in the psychological aspect always, and I think if somebody dreads it, yeah, it could be, you know, because then every association, everything that goes, like, suppose they hear something or read a book about demonology or see a show about it where it's a demon invasion, demon attack. In fact, one episode I was on of a TV show was called Demon Attack. If they start becoming overly apprehensive, then they back into the fire hydrant. It had to be the demon that did it. See shadowy forms out of the corner of the eye. Oh, it's after me. Now, that's a potent force. It is basically psychological, but it can result in real demonic presence. It's like, you know, it creates that reality. And my own feeling is that demons spring from the human mind. I don't think demons would have any existence if it weren't for the human race. Other people would disagree with that. I could lose my demonologist badge for that, but I think that they do gestate within the human psyche, the murky recesses of the human mind. So, but that's my own opinion based on, you know, what experience I have. So it's a potent force. Some people really shouldn't be watching those things if they're really afraid of them, or they should make a prior resolution that they're not going to be thrown by these things, that they're not going to be scared out of their wits. You know, it's most of these things are presented educationally or as an entertainment. No, and they're not always, they may be suggested by fact, but they're not based in fact. They're not rooted in actual circumstances. If that answers your question. So some people are susceptible.
Was there ever an incident where you were genuinely like scared of what was going on or?
No, I just said it's for people who are susceptible and it's a thing of basically a thing of the mind, but I must tell you, certainly there was. I was scared out of my wits. I didn't let people know it. I stood my ground. I'll give my, because I knew if I got chased out of this house where these things were happening, I might never go into a situation like that again. How do I know I'm not going to be scared away again? But it's that element of the unexpected that makes it really formidable. That was back, many years ago, back in 1980. I was kind of a kid. But even then, I had a reputation as a paranormal investigator who would stand his ground in a trying circumstance. I mean, before that, I'd been at the house in Harrisville at Round Top Road, the Conjuring House. So that's what I cut my paranormal investigating teeth on. And it was the subject in Providence, Rhode Island. It was a boy of 14 years of age, and he was being taken over by some invasive presence or personality. Now, when I first heard about it, I said he probably has a form of epilepsy combined with what they then called dissociative personality disorder. But the things I saw, I stayed overnight at that house to see this young man's body tossed around the room as if he was being picked up and heaved. And there's no way this was just a seizure. And he was spinning around on the floor. Religious pictures and iconography, the things would fly off the wall. We actually arranged an expulsion, which is a minor form of exorcism, and I've presided over several of those. And so I was then. I didn't know I was actually conducting it, but that's the role I took. And I remember there was a picture of Jesus Christ, a framed picture. And I was wondering if the boy, when he was being taken over during this expulsion, I was wondering if he'd look at that picture and if it would affect him. So I looked at the picture. A minute later, I looked and the picture was upside down. I was standing next to that table. I didn't see it flip over, but that must have happened. That was horrific to me, looking at that picture suddenly upside down. And a crucifix mounted on the wall flew off when these things were happening. The floor shook like an earth tremor. It's like the house groaned. My chair with me in it went back across the room. We were seated in a semicircle. I don't know why it picked out me, but my chair went back, maybe because I was taking kind of a leadership role. And at one point, this boy is, you know, I'm trying to stay prosaic, but if you can think of looking into the face of hell, that's what it was like looking at. He had wild eyes. For the life of me, it looked as if his teeth had elongated, like his gums had receded. He was just horrific. Something had taken over him again. He approached me. He was coming towards me. And I said, I just don't want to be here. I want to be back at my parents' house where I know there's food in the refrigerator. I want to go to bed. We'll talk about this tomorrow. But if I leave now, how are these people going to feel? You know, they see I'm taking some kind of leadership role here. I'm taking direction and or giving direction. And if I leave now, it's just going to blow their confidence. They're going to feel helpless. Right. So this boy is advancing towards me, and I just held up my hand, my right hand, and I said, stop. And he stopped. And I went over and I put my hands on his, instead of yelling, be gone, spirit, cast you out. I put my hands on his shoulder reassuringly. And that helped. That seemed to break the spell. Ooh, at one time I felt like I was being taken over. I felt an alien emotion. It wasn't what I was feeling so much. It just felt this urge for violence and a despair. It wasn't native to me. I don't know why I was suddenly feeling this. I wanted to jump out the window. That's what it was telling me. Jump out that window. I didn't let anybody know I was undergoing that. And I just concentrated on my own sense of self, probably said a prayer too. And then it seemed to exit me. I felt it in the back of my head just come out of me. And this force, this presence went into a young lady in the next room who was helping out. And this young lady fell to the floor and started pulling out her hair. So it seemed to go transfer from me to her. This was very real. There were all the psychological ramifications. Boy's 14 years of age, a transitional time. He came from a Hispanic family that they embraced a belief in spirit communication. So there was a lot to consider, but you know, we really couldn't consider much then. We just had to act and said prayers over this young man. And you know, it worked. He was better after that. And I didn't expect that. I said, he's going to go through years of this. And no, after that ceremony, that procedure, he was all right.
Wow. Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as the Ouija board goes, could that really be, is that really like a conduit for, or like, could that really open up like a portal for evil things to come into the area?
Ouija board. Well, potentially. And again, it's the power of association and belief. I don't mind Ouija boards. They don't bother me. I played on one even last year a few times, and without any, okay. You know, ill effect or consequence. Again, I think the Ouija board operates through two principles. It is PK, psychokinetic energy. It's like a small poltergeist activity that moves the planchette around. And I also think the mind creates that, and you feel impulses going through the fingers, and you know you're not pushing it intentionally, hopefully not, but you start getting messages, and some of those are pretty cryptic and some of them are relevant, but they just don't intimidate me. I just feel I have control over it. Could it open a portal? I don't know. If the person, again, if they're susceptible, if you're too strong for it, and that doesn't mean they're weaklings if they get affected, but if you're stronger than the spirit of the board, you're concentrating your own sense of self, it's not going to take over. Like anything, it's, you know, like power tools. You got to read the instructions first. I just don't think it's a big bad ghost coming through the Ouija board. However, when I was in my teens and my sister and I used to play on a Ouija board, we got some pretty freaky results. But we were teenagers at the time, and we had all this, what one researcher calls catepsy energy. We were generating all this adolescent, you know, angst and energy. And we, of course, believed that the board could answer us. And it started to get the raps on the walls, not just the board moving around, but raps on the walls, planchette move without us touching it. So, yeah, some freaky things happen. But they just don't bother me. I just see them as a tool. I don't think there's a real spirit operating for them unless it's created. Our mind has a remarkable propensity to create these things. And I think that's how the Ouija board works. Again, many of my colleagues will disagree with that. They don't bother me.
Do you still go around with your brother, or is he really not, you know, I know I said in my introduction that you and your brother had started with all this stuff. Is he still going about it with you, or?
Not together. We have before, to be sure, many times, but it's just been a while. We have nothing against working together. If he got called in, you know, and he felt he could use my assistance, I'd be glad to assist him, vice versa. You know, my brother has his own team near New England Anomalies Research. They have several members. They will perform blessings of a house in that way. See, my brother is more of a religious demonologist and I am a secular demonologist. It doesn't mean I don't have any faith. It just means I have a lot of questions. So yeah, we could work. Our opinions are different, but our methodology is the same. So yeah, I would work with NEAR, Panorama Paranormal, if we have occasion to. In fact, I considered inviting my brother here, but I didn't think he'd be able to make it. He's out in Warwick, Rhode Island. I'm in North Providence or Johnston now. And, you know, I didn't know if he could make it for this. If it was, you know, if he had like visual for it, maybe I'd really try to talk him into it. See, we do look alike. But yeah, he might come in, and if you have us back or have me back, he might come in. Excellent. On that. I almost surprised you with him. You're like two of us. But yeah, we would work together. Just haven't had occasion to in some time. We have been to that house in Harrisville, you know, known as the Conjuring House. We've been there together, and that was only in 2019. We investigated that together, and that was actually documented for a television episode. And we've been there several times since, you know, to say a blessing and all. But we're on very good terms with the new homeowners. But yeah, we investigated. I think that was the last time we actively worked together, was probably in July 2019. No, August 2019, you were there.
A couple months before the world stopped.
Yeah, we thought you were going to do this all over again next year. Now, well, maybe not. I don't know. Yeah. Well, it's on hold for a while. A lot of things are on hold, but, you know, we stay communicating with people.
So, Carl, as I said in the intro, you've been on many, many television shows in your career.
Oh, thank you. I could probably add a couple.
Well,
you'd imagine I get paid for this stuff, wouldn't you?
but I got to say, though, you know, as far as Ghost Hunters goes, Tom could even, you know, vouch for me with this. I always said that the first two seasons were my favorite two seasons of the Ghost Hunter.
Oh.
Because to me, it was the most realistic as far as not a lot of the production that the networks want to put in there.
Right. The networks didn't have total control over production, or the, you know, producers weren't too invasive, you might say. Yeah, that was a golden era. I left the show and I left the group TAPS, the Atlantic Paranormal Society, of my own volition. I hope under good terms. I just, you know, I didn't want to give a formal resignation because that would sound like bad blood or bad feelings. And it wasn't that, you know, I just, I had enough of it. You know, I didn't have enough control over what was said for me. And much of my dialogue was being, you know, transferred to other people. And, you know, it was a good time. I met interesting people and went to some fascinating places, you know, but after 2 years, that was enough. The show was becoming like a Frankenstein's monster. I thought it was taking over its creator. Oh, my brother and I both, yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The first two seasons are the only two seasons where you're going to find investigations that find nothing.
Yeah.
It seems since then, since you departed, every week they're finding something. And
We could do a whole show on this, and out of professional courtesy, I don't say everything.
Right. Of course.
Of course.
But because it would sound like vitriol after a while, I don't have any bad feelings about them and the show, but it took a different direction and it landslided, you know, and it became more about the entertainment than actual investigation. So I had a good time with it for a while. You know, I wish if I had it to do over again, I probably would have done like two or three more episodes with them. Investigations. But it was getting away from me. It was like that nice balloon. Yeah. Oh no, it's gone. The string broke, you know, and it was floating away. So maybe again, you know, maybe they'll, you know, if under some slightly different format, perhaps, but it became very formulaic and still is, I think. And that's what a lot of these shows are prey to. You know, you've got a cookie cutter premise with different people portraying the parts, yeah. You know, so. But yeah, good time when I was with it.
The producers get involved. And
yeah, I thought it was a golden era, those first two seasons, first 2 years. My brother and I were on as the demonologist. And what was so funny in the first season, it had come on and, you know, introduced, they show the cast with still pictures. And the high contrast still pictures. And it said Keith and Carl, but they had our names inverted, you know, like it said Keith under Carl and Carl under Keith. So I'd rather have it that way. It was funny. Because you couldn't tell.
Well, you know, Joe made a joke a couple of episodes ago that they kind of went downhill when they got their own van, when they didn't have the Roto-Rooter van turning into the tax van.
Yeah.
You
know, I have thought the same thing. I said the same thing. Yeah. It became more about production, really. You know, yeah. Packaging a commodity is what it became. Well, you know, Carl, I'm not saying they never had good episodes. Yeah. Of course they.
I'm not talking bad about them, but we have talked about this in previous episodes. We both, Joe and I, are prison guards.
Yes.
But if you give me a chance to go out every week and find a ghost, and the producer's going to give me that job, or I get to go to jail 8 hours a day, I'm going to go out and find that ghost, Carl.
You know, it's refreshing, you know, to like do what you really love and be in. I could understand that, you know.
Yeah,
because then you're scared or you're in a, you know, tricky situation for an encapsulated time, but then you get out of it, you know.
Right.
You guys deal with like heavy situations every day that you work there. So,
well, you know, it's an old saying, it's 7 hours and 45 minutes of complete boredom and 15 minutes of sheer terror.
That's a good way to describe it. Yeah. Well, you certainly have my respect. And sometimes my condolences too. You know, like they say, somebody has to do it. Not everybody will. And I'm glad you guys do.
When you were describing some of the things before about what your job is and what you're doing, I'm like, wow, that sounds a lot like corrections, only dealing with, you know, things that aren't of this realm. And we're dealing with people that are here, you know, there were a lot of similarities.
You know, I didn't want to say it, but when Carl was saying I was in a position, I was scared to hell, but I couldn't back up because everything would fall apart if I didn't stand my ground. I was like, that's my first 3 years as a rookie in Sing Sing.
Oh, it's just, my word. Yeah.
Don't back up and don't lose your ground.
Yeah,
you did later on.
You become your own camcorder for your security camera. You know, you're thinking of yourself how you look from the outside. You know, whatever happens inside, I got to deal with it. You know, I'll sort it out later. I'll think about this later. we'll think about it tomorrow.
Oh,
but you know, you just got to have that presence at the time, you know,
exactly.
Make your impression there.
We're so on the same page. It's hysterical.
So what do you got going on right now? I mean, I know the pandemic has put a kibosh on a lot of things, but what are your current ventures at the moment?
Well, I am the author, co-author of Shadow Realms Demonology Handbook. It's a primer on demonology in essay form and case histories. And it's certainly not the definitive work on demonology, but it's got some good stories in it, true stories. And I'm working on my second book. My working title is Ghosts Don't Feel the Cold. Oh, we'll see if I stick cool. with that. So I'm working on that. I am a member, as I mentioned, of Panorama Paranormal with Elise Giammarco Carlson. And as the name implies, it's, you know, we're not just limited to ghost hunting or ufology. You know, we will, if it's something strange and aberrant, if we're called to look in on it, we will. And Elise brings a lot of her research experience. She's an excellent researcher. And, you know, she has police training too. And so there's Panorama Paranormal with Elise. And I am a member of Duo Daemonology with James Anito, Deacon James Anito. And that name would imply we will address the demonic situations if they're, you know, are brought to our attention or somebody has a question, maybe we can resolve. And we have an event coming up, several this year, actually, you know, we'll see what happens with the Paracons. But at the S.K. Pierce House, also known as the Victorian Mansion in Gardner, Massachusetts, on Saturday, March 27th, we will be leading, James and I, Elise will be with us, we'll be leading a paranormal, well, a ghost hunt, really. It's like, it's an investigation, it's a ghost hunt. And James and I are experimentative, so we're going to try something really different. Don't want to give too much away, but, you know, we're going to see if we can produce the results, not just wait for them, but, you know, can they proceed from us, which is our theory.
Be proactive, not reactive.
Yeah, I know. And if you think of like creating a spirit or a ghost in a sense, you don't know how much you brought in. Like there was the famous Philip experiment, this book called Conjuring Up Philip, where the psychical research group in Toronto in 1972, they conducted a seance for the spirit. They set out a candy dish as an offering. They asked the spirit to answer with a series of knocks, and not the first seance, but the second seance, they started to get answers. And they were talking to the spirit, trying to communicate with Philip. Philip was a 16th century nobleman who took his life over a tragic affair, flung himself off the turret of his castle. The strange thing about this seance, all seances are strange, but what was really unique about this seance was that they made up Philip. Philip was a creation, a literary creation. They just made him up. By gum, that he started answering as Philip. Hmm. You know, they got all this PK, the psychic activity. And on they were doing a talk show, and one of the researchers said, oh, Philip, and they were demonstrating what Philip could do. He was rapping the table for the television cameras in the audience. And one of the researchers, unfortunately, said, oh, Philip, you know, we just made you up anyway. Philip stopped answering.
Wow.
Took about a year to coax it, those knocks to come back. This begs the question, did they inadvertently call in some spirit, some once living person whose history was much like Philip, and they just called it in? Did they actually create an active responsive thought form?
Right.
You know, is Philip there now? Could somebody call up Philip again at a seance? So that was a very interesting experiment. We're going to do something along those lines when we go to the S.K. Pierce House. And tickets are $65. There are several left, so keep us in mind. Duo Daemonology website is just demonology.org, spelled the standard way, demonology with a Y, www.demonology.org.
All right, we'll definitely link that into the show notes.
Oh, yeah, if you guys can come to the Victorian House on the 27th of March, but you'll see us somewhere.
Yeah, all right.
You'll see me somewhere. Yeah.
So if somebody needed to contact you for, you know, any of your services, how would they go about doing that?
The shortest route would be through the ubiquitous Facebook. Unlike our president, I still have all the social media. You know, I just got to say something. So, yeah, but I saw this funniest meme on Facebook. I saw it showed Donald Trump with this funny, I don't know where they got the picture. He had the most awkward smile on, and he's holding the Etch-a-Sketch. He says, follow me on Etch-a-Sketch. That was cool. Hey, yeah. But,
you know, Carl, honestly, we make jokes about it, but I think, you know, since he's got no social media anymore, I think we got a real shot at getting him on a guest. You know, I think we can get him on our podcast now. We just can't talk politics.
Yeah, you know, he might accede to that, you know, especially if it helps whatever. If it lets him talk, you know.
Right.
Yeah, don't schedule him the same night as me because nobody will look at me, you know. Yeah, that, I'd watch him. I'd be sitting there watching. Oh my God! You have a shot now.
His mic, though. I mean, he wouldn't let us probably.
Oh, you have to. Yeah. A month ago, that would have been an impossible thought, but now you have a shot with it. Yeah. So you can find me through Facebook at Carl L. Johnson. I'm probably the only Carl L. Johnson in the state of Rhode Island who's a demonologist. We have a page for Panorama Paranormal on Facebook and a Duo Demonology page on Facebook. That's the old-fashioned spelling, the King James parlance, D-A-E-M-O-N-O-L-G-I-E. That's the, you know, duodemonology. But the website is just demonology with a Y in the standard spelling. So you poke around for me, you'll find Carl someplace. I'm not that hard to locate. I have a personal email address. You can post that if you'd like that, carcosin@live.com. So look for me, you'll find me.
All right.
And I'll be ready to send you an autographed copy of my book. Well, within reason, how many requests I get.
Of course.
Way too many.
Carl, I really enjoyed this interview.
I have too. It's shot by. I mean, you know, I hope we fielded you. I think we did get to your questions, you know, like pretty much sometimes we combined, you know, my answer would cover two questions at once. We got through the whole 13, you know. Oh, wait, one thing we didn't mention was that I used to be a Luciferian, which actually was a form of Satanism. But, you know, you call yourself that, you're going to get a bad rep and you have to explain it. You know, I mean, you have to expect it, I should say. But yeah, in my later teens and early 20s, I was a practicing Luciferian. So, which is taking more of a positive light to it. Lucifer being the light bearer and symbolizing enlightenment. But I remember Ed and Lorraine Warren requested to film one of my ceremonies, you know, my magic ceremonies. And I allowed it since I was on friendly terms with them. I, you know, shouldn't have allowed so many reporters there, that's for sure. But there were some good pictures from that. And when we were about to start, you know, they're going to start filming, Ed Warren said, "Well, where's the animal?" I said, "Well, what animal?" "The one you're going to sacrifice." I said, you're known for that. You're going to get some misunderstandings. But I said, I don't do that. I rescue animals. I don't do that. He said, "What about, where's your, you know, your dagger?" He meant an athame, you know.
"Yeah.
Where's your dagger?" I said, "What dagger?" He said, "We have a ceremonial sword. What do you mean by dagger?" He said, "Well, for the bloodletting." I don't do that either. I dress pretty cool for these things, but I don't do those things, you know.
Yeah.
So, listen, now I could see what they were expecting.
Carl, after all we've seen in jail. Oh, you worship Lucifer? Come on in, pal. No problem.
Yeah, that's pretty mild form of expression, yeah. You know, considering everything that's happened in this country and happens, you know, just societal things, you know. So, yeah, but at the time it was a big deal because that was during the big occult revival, the late 60s. Mine was in the early 1970s. And I became very well known for being a Luciferian and, you know, being this, well, some people said devil worshiper. It really wasn't that. It was just, you know, an expression at the time. You know,
right. But,
I still have an affinity for black candles, still fond of them, you know, bring back good memories.
Actually, we didn't get to one question. The picture that you sent me of that demonic face, what was that all about? Where did that come from?
To my knowledge, the best of my knowledge, that is a genuine paranormal manifestation, if you will. That was a house in Coventry, Rhode Island that I was called in my capacity as a demonologist. It was 13 years ago. And this couple had moved into what became a horrendously haunted house, and they were actually driven out of the house eventually. There was genuine poltergeist activity there. It seemed to combine the elements of a poltergeist, demonic haunt, and human interactive spirit. All seemed to be there. Oh, every time I was there, it seemed there was like crockery flying around. A dinner knife came sailing down, not spinning, but sailing down the hallway. I was holding a thermograph, you know, a remote thermogauge, and it struck the instrument I was holding, the knife did, and then clattered to the floor, but it didn't hit my hand. The lady of the house said, "Oh, that's not even one of my knives." The dinner plate appeared above my head and smashed in front of me. Oh, everything was going on in that house. Got some very malevolent EVP spirit voices recorded. So one night they had all hell breaking loose, really. And the guy who owned the house, we'd become friendly. He called me. It was 2:30 in the morning. He said, "Listen, we don't know what to do. We got to get out of here. You know, everything, she's getting hit and everything." And I said, "Look, I'll come over. It's going to take me a half an hour, but I'll get over." They said, "No, we got to leave now." So they got the kids in their station wagon, some SUV they had. And the guy, the owner of the house, we'll call him Tony, he had forgotten his camera on the table near the entrance of the house. He wanted that because he had his paranormal evidence on that. So he ran in to get his camera, his roll film, I believe, ran in to get his camera. And standing at the top of the stairs was this demonic looking figure. He had the presence of mind to aim that camera and take a picture of that entity, that form. And that's what came out. To the best of my knowledge, that's the face of a demon. That's a demonic visage. I can't say for certain. I did not take the picture, but that's what he got. When he took his picture, that face came out. He didn't think anything would come out, but he saw this figure standing at the top of his stairs. That's what drove them out of their house. And he got a picture of it. I don't think he even locked the door afterwards. They just flew out of there, and that's what came out. That is a very rare instance of a picture of what could be a demon actually imprinted on a film.
Yeah, that's definitely a frightening picture.
Yeah.
And look at it. It's like a Joker face. It's, you can say so much about that. It's shriveled nose. It looks like its jaw is unhinged, right, like a boa constrictor. And it's just seething with malevolence there. It's disturbing. Even now, looking at that, yeah, gives me the chills.
Thank you very, very much for this interview, man. I greatly appreciate it for you coming on our.
Well, it's been fun for me. I hope you'll have me on again. This conversation just flowed.
Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely, sir. Absolutely.
Yeah, and do consider having me on again. This has been fun. I like you guys. I like
likewise. Yeah,
we're just talking. Okay.
Good night.
Good night to you. Bye bye.
Have a good one, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to the Ghost Hacks Podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and find us on Facebook groups. If you have any paranormal experiences you would like to share, please email joeghosthackspodcast@gmail.com, and we may even read your submission on the air. Have a good night, and don't forget to change your shorts.